This episode is brought to you by 100 Bogart Street. Do you need a conference room for your next meeting? Learn more by visiting 100bogart.com.
This week, Meat and Three is taking you to market and all over the world, from Newfoundland to Tunisia.
Well, a lot of us think of, you know, the British Empire trading things like spices and sugar and silk. But you write that it actually began with salt cod from Newfoundland.
There was a port closure in Tunisia, which was horrible. I mean, it was months, boats just sitting on the water waiting to go, and they couldn't go anywhere.
And we'll learn about how markets have changed, whether because of their customers or the climate.
A few years ago, something around 10 years, it was totally different.
It almost manifests itself to almost smelling like an old fire pit. When you, when you put it out, it has that sort of charcoal-y smell to it. It's not good for wine.
Join us this week on Meat and Three for our global market tour. And don't forget to subscribe to Meat and Three wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're listening to Feast Meets West, the show tracing the stories behind your favorite Asian foods. I'm your host, Linda Liu. We are broadcasting live from Heritage Radio Network at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Every episode, we dig deep on an aspect of Asian cuisine or culture by having a conversation with the passionate people from the world of Asian food. Tonight, we're talking with Ali Asimov of Lagman House, where he and his family serve Dungan cuisine. As Ligaya Mishan of the New York Times pointed out in her Hungry City article, Lagman House is likely the first and only restaurant in the city to offer the food of the Dungans, Chinese Muslims descended from 7th century Arab and Persian Silk Road traders who married Han Chinese. In the late 19th century, thousands of them fled China after the government's brutal suppression of a Muslim uprising. And in all the world, there are only a little over 100,000 Dungans. So we are truly lucky to have the Asimov family sharing their cuisine with us in Brooklyn. Ali and his family immigrated to the U.S. from southern Kazakhstan. Is that right, Ali?
Yes. It's southern Kazakhstan, which is the city name Taraz. I would really consider it, it's really south.
Okay.
Like the border of the Kazakhstan.
Cool. And in case anyone's wondering geographically where Kazakhstan is, it is a Central Asian country and former Soviet republic. It extends from the Caspian Sea in the west to the Altai Mountains at its eastern border with China and Russia. It is the world's largest landlocked country and the ninth largest in the world. So many fun facts. Dungan cuisine is more Chinese influenced than some of the other Central Asian restaurants you may find here in the city. So for example, the Uyghur restaurants here represent maybe more of a Turkic diet of the people living in the eastern part of Central Asia, like in the Xinjiang province of China. Friend of the pod, Doran Wong, is also here in the studio with us. Welcome, Doran.
Hello.
You may remember him from the Asian Food Mafia episode last fall. Doran is the culinary force behind the River and Hills Hospitality Group, and he's here to share his firsthand experiences cooking and eating in Kazakhstan, where he consulted on a Chinese restaurant.
Yes.
Ali, let's start with you. Just tell us about the Dungan food you make at Lagman House.
Thank you. Again, it's nice.
It's nice having you here.
We kind of introduced like Dungan food in New York, and we're trying to spread it. The Dungan food, which is a mix of cultures, basically. Mm-hmm. And
And one of your most like popular dishes is the lagman.
Lagman, yeah. Which lagman is just a word that's more Russian speaking people use. But the way we say it is we say lumen, which is very closely associated with the word lamian in Chinese.
Like in Mandarin.
Yeah, it's basically it's a hand pulled noodles and served with different like toppings. Maybe like a soup, stir fried, and maybe entirely like a braised broth.
Like so it's totally versatile.
Exactly.
And would you say your restaurant is like family style? Is it the food that you grew up eating?
Yes, I totally agree with that. It's the food we're trying to serve. We specialize in homemade food, basically. Mm-hmm. The taste we usually get from the customers is like, wow, the food really tastes like home food, or this is how we use.
So the other people who are familiar with Dunkin' cuisine are like, oh, it tastes like home.
Yes.
Oh, that's great. And is it popular in Kazakhstan, this kind of food?
In southern Kazakhstan, where we came from, it's very, very popular. Like every corner around every restaurant or like...
you can assume it's Dunkin' cuisine.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
And what's the story behind your restaurant? Like, how did you guys decide to open a restaurant?
When we moved here, there's a lot of restaurants. They serve like hand pulled noodles, and all these restaurants are opened and operated by the people who are from like, you know, Central Asia as well.
Okay, cool. And what part of Brooklyn is this? Are you talking about?
It's majority in Sheepshead Bay.
Okay.
So they have hand pulled noodles, you know, and people go there, eat, and we also went there to eat and try it out. And how we saw how people were amazed how the food tastes like. Oh, they're like, oh, this is so good. This is really hand pulled noodles. This is so authentic and stuff like that. But then we, like my family, thought, you know, it's for us, it was a decent kind of food.
Yeah.
Not to like offend anybody. And then we came up with the idea that maybe we should open our own restaurant and maybe show like the lamian and the lagman that we eat at home. Not that it's a basically a more authentic type, like the original, not unchanged.
I see. And where are your recipes from?
So the recipes come from, I would say it's from basically the chef, like, is my mom.
Oh, yes.
And everything comes from like her mother and generation from generation.
So it's just been passed down from in your generation. Family.
Exactly. There's no like formal recipes.
Yeah.
Everything is learned from like older generations.
I see. And did your mom learn to cook from her mom? Like, exactly. Where did she get that experience?
Oh, I mean, like when I was asking my mom, like, well, like, when did you start cooking? And then she said like she started hand pulling noodles when she was just 12.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? And then it's the culture we grew up in. It's the girls that thought to, like, start making food, preparing food, taking care of the family. So they start learning how to cook when they're, like, really young, like 10, 8. And by age of, like, 12, my mom was used to do a handful of noodles, which is a great, great skill, because it's very, very like difficult to.
Yeah, it's very physical.
It's physical and also requires a lot of like craftsmanship. Like you have to feel it. Like it's not like you just follow the recipe and it just comes out.
Yeah,
boom.
And that comes from years of experience. Her understanding how to like work with the dough and like feel it for when it's ready or the consistency.
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, that's truly amazing. And so. It sounds like this idea to open a restaurant took shape very quickly. Like, was it something that you guys ever imagined before that you would be doing? Or it's something that, like, after you came to your neighborhood, you're like, hey, let's do this thing. And then, like, ta-da, you opened the restaurant, like, very quickly.
Like, we actually never considered opening a restaurant, or we never had an idea of having our own restaurant. Like in family, we have a pretty big family. I have 4 other siblings, my dad, and my mom always has to make food for us.
Yeah.
And then everybody's different, so she had to make food for every single one. So everybody, everybody like it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So you're like, why not extend this to more diners?
Exactly. So like,
poor mom.
my dad said, you know, maybe we should open up a restaurant. Yeah. Maybe it's like part of American dream.
Yeah.
Like we can have our own business. We can work for ourselves. You know, maybe go beyond that, having just a restaurant. So we can start off with one restaurant and see how it's gonna go, and.
And yeah, we'll talk more about that.
Yeah.
But first, let's talk about the food a bit more. Like, what does your menu look like, and what would you tell like first timers to order?
Our menu is to everybody's surprise have a lot of flour or noodles. Everything's basically dough based,
mm-hmm. And that tends to be the case in like. Northern, like China, and then I guess, you know, the countries bordering that too. Like more dough products than rice?
Yes, yes. I would agree with that. Like the 80% of our menu, but excluding salads, like everything has some kind of flour.
Okay. But it's pretty well balanced with like... the other like meats and produce that you have?
Of course, yes, yes. So like we eat a lot of noodles, and the noodles it kind of represents like a rice for other cultures. You know what I mean? For example, from southern China, they eat a lot of rice and they eat different toppings. We eat noodles with different toppings.
Yeah, and so what should a newcomer order for the first time?
I would really suggest for the newcomers to order food that's really specific to our kitchen, which is hand-pulled noodles.
Mm. So and the lag mein of all types.
Exactly, lag mein of all types. So we have maybe 5 hot types and 2 like cold types. So you can try whatever you want. Some of them have vegetables, some of them don't have vegetables. Some of them can be vegetarian, some of them can be... like spicy or or even can be something cold and like winter type. I mean, summer type. Like it's refreshing, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And what goes into the process of making lag mein? So you said it's really labor intensive. Like how long does it take? Like, you know, like how long does it cook for? Like how is it labor intensive?
It's for every person is different, but in our restaurant, it approximately takes from scratch to like finished product, which is a hand-pulled noodles. It takes around 8 hours.
Mm.
So we start off with the water and flour. I mean, water and flour, we'll mix them, and it takes a long time to sit there, just to sit there. So the water and the flour mixed up like perfectly balanced.
Okay.
Like in homogeneous kind of substance.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, you know, all the gluten's are relaxed. Exactly. And yeah. So it does take time. Very, very labor intensive for sure.
And it takes a lot of like physical, not only how you have to feel it, but you also have to use a lot of force like to, because the.
Need the dough
because like the proportions we use makes the dough very, I would say,
is it chewy, like hard?
Hard, which means it has
needs
a little
force
bit of water.
To like knead.
Knead. Okay. Yeah, and it needs hand force. Like you can't use any machines for that, because it has to be hand done, and you can't replace that with machines because you have to feel it too. You know, sometimes you have to add more water. Sometimes you have to let it sit there for like another half an hour.
Depends on if it's raining outside or it's like dry day.
Even the like the room temperature or the circulation and like everything matters.
For yeah,
and it's very like it's been 1 year since we've been out, and then it's still we can't perfect the. It's not like 100% consistent.
Yeah.
It's like every time it fluctuates. Sometimes
every day is different.
Yeah, every day is different.
Oh, man.
But in the majority side, it's consistent. But then, you know, if you go too deep into it, it's maybe it's slightly different than the yesterday.
And then how do you pull it? Like, how do you make the dough into noodles?
Do you want me to like start from the beginning, how we start off, and then, or you should just...
just like, you know, you have like a bit of dough, and then how does it...
Yeah, we have a bit of dough, make sure it's ready, and then if, when it's ready, it's pretty big batch, maybe like maybe 20, 30 pounds. Mm. So we split into like 2 pound batches. So
yeah.
We put 2 pound batches, and then we roll it out as like a big length of...
little tubes almost?
Yeah.
Long tubes, I guess.
Yes, long tubes, and then... We
you coil it.
We coil it, yeah. We coil it into like one each other and stack them together.
Why coil it? Is it to like save space or is it easier to manage that way?
Yeah, it's if when we make the tubes and then it's to save the space and it's more
like easy to transport.
It's also like one long noodle.
Yeah, exactly. You can't
can't replicate that.
Right.
Yeah,
right,
yeah, it's. It's like most productive way of saving space and also like stacking. It's like there's so many of them.
Wow.
And you have to make
so
it.
So you're coiling all the noodles, and then after that.
After that, you let it sit there for like an hour.
Okay.
And then you uncoil it, and then you have to make it even thinner and longer.
Mm.
And then after that, you don't coil it this time, but you just stack it as stack it on each other like.
Mm-hmm. Because it's ready to get
but
in
then
the water.
Make sure you don't. Yeah, make sure you don't. It doesn't get tangled up.
Yeah.
And then another like 10 to 15 minutes, you have to start hand pulling them. It's long enough that it's three process. Like you make the tubes are pretty. The first time you make the tubes are pretty thick. Mm-hmm. Then you make it skinnier.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last process is you hand pull it, which is you make it like as skinny as you want. Like sometimes. I don't know. It's
and this is like where you have, you know, you're like pulling it with both hands, and you're like kind of like
yes,
pushing it like with force onto like the table or in the air.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's so you try to go around your fingers and your hands as much space as possible, and then so it
doesn't
get
cat's cradle.
It doesn't get stacked up together,
yeah.
And then you hit it.
Oh.
Against the table. At the same time, you pull a little bit.
Oh, wow. This is
then you hit
form.
And pull, hit and pull. Like, and you keep doing it until you get the desired thickness.
Yeah.
It's a good stress relief kind of
exercise. The sound and then the energy.
Yeah, it is. I mean.
But I can see how, like, you would get, like, sore arms from that. Is that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Actually, I tried to do that myself. I tried to learn. I mean,
okay. Your mom must have the most like tremendous biceps then.
Yeah, she does have a bigger bicep than I do.
And then you said there's different ways to prepare and eat it. So you can have it hot, cold, boiled, stir fried, different gravies. Like, yeah, I guess traditionally, what's like a you know way that you like to eat it most?
I like to eat it with just the boiled noodles and the toppings more. Not stir-fried. I like it more like traditional way, like braised. Like it's very gravy, like thick sauce.
Mm.
And it's we have it on the menu. It's called the classic lagman. We usually eat it at home, and it's very simple, but it's like it's very tasty.
Yeah. And Doran, what was your experience having lagman in Kazakhstan? Is it similar to like what you had at Lagman House here?
You know, it's funny because when I did go to Lagman House, the flavors were very, it was actually even better than what I've had in Kazakhstan. You know, the flavors were bolder and it was, the noodles were very good, you know, very chewy. The textures were really good. You can see that there was a lot of like, a lot of like emotional attachment, you know,
in
built into
noodle.
The food. I really enjoyed it. You know, the food is definitely very, very good. It's worth the trip to Sheepshed Bay for sure.
Yeah. And I guess for both of you, what's typically in this spice pantry for Dungan cuisine? Like, what are the most common flavors? like spices that you use to make it so delicious?
To be honest, we don't really use a lot of spices because the okay. like the Kazakhstan, the country we came from, it's very
right. It's landlocked.
Yeah, exactly. And we don't have a lot of spices, so we right now we're trying to incorporate more like white pepper that we don't really have in Kazakhstan. Sichuan peppers.
Oh, you're like, adding things.
Like, yeah, we.
But traditionally in Kazakhstan, what would you use?
Traditionally, like, we just stick with the black pepper.
Black pepper, okay.
Like the spicy pepper.
Okay.
The red peppers mm-hmm. and just the salt. That's
salt,
it.
Salt, and then that's. I guess with the combination of like the onion and like the meat and the
yes.
it just makes the gravy very like flavorful and well rounded.
Yeah, I was gonna mention that we more stick to the onions, okay. garlic.
Onions, garlic. What about tomato or?
Tomatoes, yes, also tomatoes. We all more stick to those ingredients that make the gravies more like flavorful.
Yeah.
Than the like spices.
Are there specific herbs that you use?
Yes, I would say we use fenugreek, but I'm not sure if we have it in America because I couldn't find it. We use the fenugreek a lot, and
I'll bring you some.
Oh yeah. Nice, Doran with the connects.
Yeah,
what is that?
Fenugreek. I think a lot of Indians use fenugreek in their curries. But it's definitely a spice.
Mm. Yeah. Is there anything that's similar to it? Like as a substitute?
Maybe a little bit fennel, fennelish okay. kind of flavor to it. Yeah. When I was in Kazakhstan, and I remember that it was very hard to get a lot of things. But I did see a lot of, in the bazaars, there was a lot of spices. And I don't know what part of Kazakhstan incorporates those spices into their cooking. And it's not Dungan cuisine, because Dungan cuisine is more Chinese.
Yeah. I mean, what are the other like major cuisine like influences in Kazakhstan?
A lot of like Georgian cuisine is very popular. Okay. There is a version of Chinese food, but I think it's a little bit mixed, like Dungan-ish kind of local Chinese. There's a lot of Korean restaurants. And there's like, there's also like another, restaurateur that's actually kind of pioneering a lot, like different new concepts in Almaty, Kazakhstan. And you'll start to see a little bit more European, a little bit more Mediterranean. They're really kind of hardcore on their baking now, too.
Oh. And that's where you were, right?
I was in Almaty. Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah, I totally agree with the concept. Now I see that they're trying to improve the cities.
Right.
And before, when, 20, 30 years ago, there's only one, there weren't variety food, just Korean, local Koreans.
Right.
And local Dungan cuisines, and maybe a local Kazakh cuisines, but then right now there's more tourists coming in, and they're trying right. to like you said, incorporate more Chinese, but again, you said it more looked like a localish because they lack of resources, and
right.
they try to use their knowledge, but they use whatever they have.
Right. Yeah.
And yeah.
Then, yeah.
We're going to take a really quick break, and once we come back, we got to get into that a little bit more.
This episode was brought to you by 100 Bogart, a new building in Bushwick, Brooklyn, with meeting and event spaces available for on-demand booking. Looking for the next perfect outdoor location for your next gathering? Host your next event at 100 Bogart's impressive rooftop, just steps away from the Morgan L Stop. It's one of the largest and tallest roof spaces in Bushwick, boasting 360-degree views of Brooklyn, Manhattan, and Queens. 100 Bogart's rooftop is available for your next networking event, fundraiser, special performance, or photo shoot. There's approximately 5,000 square feet, ample space for up to 100 guests. For more information on hosting an event at 100 Bogart's Rooftop, email info@100bogart.com or call 718-362-3539.
Welcome back. You're listening to Feast Meets West. So we just left off talking about like what is more traditionally like Kazakhstan style cuisine. Could you guys describe that a little bit more? Like, what's the typical diet like? Like, is it more like protein heavy or produce heavy, dairy, all that stuff?
Yeah, I would say Kazakhstan, it's more about protein based. Like, they eat a lot of meat.
Is it because it's like cold, or like why do you think they eat a lot of meat?
Come from nomads.
Oh, okay.
Nomads, you know, they eat a lot of meat, a lot of dairy.
Exactly. Traditionally, they used to travel a lot.
Ah, yes.
They
yes.
go from one that. Place to another, and yeah. the, all they had with them is just a herd of like horses, sheep, and that's the only thing they could stick with themselves, and that's why they eat actually.
Yeah.
Like every time they travel, like they settle in one place and then maybe they use one of the animals they have.
Herd members.
Yeah, herd members.
Yeah.
They use, and what they use for, they also use a lot of, like you said, dairy, which is, but it's, they use horse milk.
Oh, horse milk.
And,
what's that?
Camel milk.
Okay. Yeah, what is this like? What is horse milk?
Horse milk, it's... I don't know 100% for sure, but it's... I tried it. It's it's alcoholic beverage, actually. It's fermented.
Okay.
It's fermented horse
milk. Sour?
Yeah, it's sour. And oh, gosh, it's actually gives us... It's like you said, it's... gives all those energy and kills the thirst. During the like the hot days and the cold days, gives you the, all the necessary vitamins, and it's right now it's considered more like a delicacy. Before it used to be sort of widespread, and everybody just drink it every day. It doesn't matter what age. It's even though it's alcoholic, like kids drink it too. But what else with that? And again, they do. They eat a lot of horse too, like if I'm not sure if I mentioned they eat horse meat.
Isn't horse a delicatessen?
Delicacy?
Yes. can't speak today.
It's
actually more expensive. I remember at the bazaars they were kind of like.
Yes, I would say it really depends delicacy for what kind of which caste system you are in. If you were like pretty wealthy. Mm-hmm. You can eat it whatever you want, but traditionally it's more for the winter. They eat it for the winter. They stack up for the winter, basically. What they do is they, I wouldn't say kill horse, and then they, the entire meat they salt it and they dry it on air.
Okay.
They dry it and it's basically it's not like.
How
smoking.
Is it served usually? Is it like, you know, in like a stir fry thing, or is it like a horse steak, or like how does one usually order it?
I think there's they use horse for celebration, right? For you know, I know that when they have someone very important and they invite them over to the house, and they'll serve horse, they'll serve the you know the intestines, make sausages out of them.
Yes, I would say it's more like a luxury, and also they, I don't want to offend anybody, but then it's the Kazakhs majority they eat bishparmak, which literally means five fingers. It's like a sheets of dough, like a square sheets of dough, and with a meat broth,
okay.
And they use horse meat for it, and it's like their national food, and. Every family, when they, majority of the family, when they invite somebody, they try to invite like their relative or something. And the way they make the horse meat also shows how well they make it. You know what I mean? It's like their style. Everybody has different style. And why they serve bishparmak with horse meat, and it's not just the meat just served with the noodles, but they have to be pre-made, which is like the, like I said, salted, you dry it on the air, and they also make a special dish. It's a sausage called Hase.
Yeah.
It's a horse intestine, and they stick meat that's part of the ribs of the horse ribs basically, and they stick it inside, and then they also let it dry in the air, and then the way every family makes is different.
Yeah.
So one of the family maybe they want to.
I mean, hearing you describe it, I mean, it sounds like a ton of time and different techniques go into that. So when you're served something like this, I mean, it's like pretty special. I guess for like myself and maybe some of our listeners, it's like for horses, a very foreign concept. Like what does that taste like? How does it compare to some of the other proteins that we're more familiar with?
For me, I also like horse meat. Like mm-hmm. For me, it's still a delicacy. Like even right. though if I'm in America for, it tastes dry and very rough.
Okay, I don't know. You're really selling it.
It resembles beef, but leaner than beef. But yet it has a little gaminess to it.
Okay.
But if I didn't tell you if it was horse, you wouldn't really know.
Yeah,
I would say it's very chewy.
It is chewy,
very chewy.
Because it's a strong animal.
It's like a very muscular. Like you can really feel. It's not like a tender like a steak. But sometimes you have to chew it really densely. And I forgot to mention. Usually the horse meat, the only way I know how they serve it is they boil it in the water. It's like the way you make pho. Like they boil it in the water, and all the juices come out from the meat. Mm-hmm. And then they use that broth for the sauce, like for the noodles, for the beshpamak.
Yeah. And Doran, while you were in Kazakhstan, did you have to work with horse meat?
I did, actually.
Oh, wow.
I did.
Okay.
I mean, I remember the first time I touched it was the horse neck meat.
And, uh-huh. And you knew it was horse
I neck knew meat. It was okay, horse. Right. Yeah. Because they don't eat pork out mm-hmm. in Kazakhstan, or it's very rare that they do eat pork. And I was tasked to create a dish that was a little bit best of both worlds. And at the time,
do you mean best of what worlds?
Chinese and Kazakhstan trying to meet in the middle, mm-hmm. where we have something that's very classic to Chinese cuisine and something that's very familiar to them. So I ended up doing a barbecued horse,
right, sweet barbecue and, pork typically right. from like Canton cuisine,
right? So we marinated it, and it tasted fantastic. I have to say it was something that but it was very inconsistent, though, you know, like the neck meat was very tough, and sometimes it was really dry when we cooked it, sometimes it was really chewy. It was like we couldn't really couldn't really get a consistent kind of product with it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Sounds like consistency. That's a lot of
in the Kazakhstan, there's a lot of things like that. Like there's no quality control. Like some.
Okay.
You don't know which horse worked a lot, which horse was very treated well.
Yeah. You can't just go to like your number one like horse farmer. Like there's no person.
Yeah. There's different people. You buy it from different people.
Okay.
And, you know, usually, like, some of the animals are very old, which makes the meat, like you said, like, very chewy.
Yeah,
and, like,
so
tough.
You don't know what kind of quality your horse
exactly.
you're getting.
There's no quality control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here. Everything is pretty consistent.
Oh, yeah.
Did you find that, like, challenging, Doran? Like, what else?
Well, it was extremely challenging when I was actually working out in Kazakhstan. You know, the product was very hard to get. You know, they had like local ducks that I was trying to use. And we actually ended up having to import them from China because the local Kazakhstan duck it's very inconsistent. Sometimes it would come in with a lot of feathers, and sometimes it doesn't have feathers or skin.
How can you even plan for production?
Yeah, it was tough, you know. Mm-hmm. And you know, I was tasked with opening up a Chinese restaurant.
Yeah. So there aren't that many Chinese restaurants yet. Is that the scenario?
There are Chinese restaurants, okay. But it's kind of their version of a Chinese restaurant. Okay. It's kind of like a Dungan something mixed with the, you know,
right.
Some
so you were trying to push for it to be like a little bit more Chinese than correct. What was already yeah. there.
Yeah, and it was really hard finding product out there.
What
and,
else? What did yeah. you have a hard time?
It was everything. Everything oh, okay. from all right. from soy sauce to vinegar. You know, I remember trying to look for red vinegar. Uh-huh. And
there's no, like, I put my, like, air quotes, Asian grocery there that you can just go to
no,
and find this
no,
stuff?
No, no. Okay. It was, you know, there's a Korean supermarket, but, you know, they don't import that much because the demand is not that much.
Mm-hmm. If not
you
there
see,
yet.
If
yeah.
you see five bottles of soy sauce on the shelf and you buy those five bottles, you're lucky to see it stocked back up within a month.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's... As big as the country is, you know, there's certain things that are, you know, different. And they use, the use of their products are a little bit different. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I guess I'm curious to hear also more about, like, the dairy. are there, like, cheeses? Or is it more just, like, the milk that's being used?
Oh, milk. Mostly, I'm not sure about cheese, but I know for sure there's a in the Kazakh culture there's a lot of fermentation going on, mm-hmm.
like yogurt.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Not yogurt, but they call quark. It ayran.
Quark.
Oh, okay. I was gonna get there. It's yeah. the last stage.
Yeah.
So if you have a fresh milk, right? It gets a little bit fermented. It becomes ayran. Or yogurt, called okay. Its English version is gonna be yogurt, and when the yogurt becomes more fermented and it's not really consumable anymore, the thing they do is they put in like a cotton material inside, mm-hmm. and then they let it drain the water out. Water drain out, and inside it comes out as like a cheese.
Yeah, like curds.
Yeah. And they use it. They add some salt. And they make, that I mentioned before, kurt. They call it kurt. It's like, I don't know how to describe it. It's really.
Is it like a side dish or
it's also delicacy. It's like.
And what kind of milk is it made from?
Usually typically? It's made from cow milk.
Okay.
It's cow milk. It's fermented cow milk, like 3 or 4 times fermented.
Mm.
And the water is drained out, they add some salt, and they make like a little balls. Not the balls, okay. It really depends on the shapes are different. But they make shape, and it's usually becomes like as hard as, like a rock hard. It's like basically a bowl you can't really...
Do you spread it, or do you like chew on it?
You chew on it. the kids,
Doran, did you have like, it? I see you nodding now. Did you like it?
Oh, so it's kind of like for breakfast.
Oh.
Yeah, I always had like a ball of quark.
Do you think that would be popular here? Do you think people could get into that?
Yes, I would totally. I think that. Yeah, I think we should. I was thinking of how to bring it here, or maybe start producing it here. Mm. But it's very difficult because the milk is here so different.
Yeah.
Like here, it's more like a pasteurized.
Right, we get rid of all the good stuff.
All the good, exactly. But there you use the farm, like you have a cow,
yeah.
right in your backyard, and to make that kurt, it's like you need like the real milk, like
right.
which just came out from the cow. But I think it's gonna be popular. It's in Kazakh. In those countries, like mm-hmm. Kazakhstan,
the Central Asian countries,
it really goes well with like the beer or something.
Ooh, oh, it's interesting. Like, okay,
it's. Did like you ever try
hard like, cheesy thing with beard?
Yeah, it's like cheese, but when you bite it, it tastes like it's kind of sandy, like consistent. It's like it's really hard to explain.
Yeah, it
I wish I really
like,
had.
Like, I know I have we have to bring stack. Some. Next time to try.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are there any other like food trends there from like Kazakhstan you feel like we should have here? What else are we missing out on, other than like horse?
I really like the Adana kebab in Kazakhstan. Their version of it.
Oh. Okay. How did they do that?
It was the meat. It was like a very seasoned meat, and then it was wrapped in like a lavash, and then it was pressed. Like on a panini grill.
Ooh.
So it was crispy on the outside.
Oh, that sounds great.
And then they served it with this yogurt drink.
Oh, that's Turkish style. It's called they have it here. It's like a Turkish style gyro. They have it the gyro carts, but then that version is more like, yeah, it's very popular there. But did you try that? They have the Adanas in Pisipse Bay.
I have not tried it.
They have it. Yeah. You should come over one
it's
time.
Good? Yeah. Okay.
It's good. I mean, it's not that bad. All I'm gonna say is about it.
Yeah.
It's not bad at all.
But it's cool to try that here.
Yeah, but I think there's a lot of customers come in. They try to ask for us horse meat. We have a beshbarmak, which is Kazakh food, in our restaurant. But there's a lot of people come in. They ask for traditional one, which is
with the
horse meat. And they really want to try horse meat, but I tried to explain it's you can't have horse meat in New York because it's.
What do you make it with?
Yeah. We make it with beef.
Yeah,
with beef. We try to use the same style like
the
like
same cooking
marinate the meat before, but it doesn't really come out as authentic.
Yeah,
but people still ask for horse meat, and maybe some people even try to bring their own. Like, what if we bring our horse meat? Like,
no. Where do they get their horse from?
Oh,
people
gosh.
Do everything. Yeah.
Wow, they'll do anything for the food.
Yeah.
And yeah, so Ali, what's the reception been like by your local customers and New Yorkers? Do you feel like they like it? Are they coming back for more?
Yes, majority of people like it. They're very mm-hmm. happy that we have some variety or maybe like the real noodle house.
Mm-hmm.
Like the, like
and
I said.
And they can see it's made with love and,
exactly,
and craftsmanship.
Exactly, real effort. And I see a lot of also American people, not only our people from our countries, but also from American people coming in, and they really love the food because this is New York, and there's a lot of variety foods. You have Thai food, you have Indian food, you have all the...
Yeah, people love noodles. They want to try something new. Yeah,
exactly, and then we open up a new food, and this is like totally new. It's like... never seen it before, and we see a lot of people coming from Manhattan. The farthest people the customer I had is from Washington, like state Washington State, from Seattle. I was really impressed
cool.
at how they said they really traveled here. Just like they came in from Washington to New York, but then they really committed to our area to come to the area to try our food, and I was very impressed by that. And
yeah, that's amazing what you're doing. I guess what's your goal for the next like 6 months with the restaurant?
I mean, we're still pretty new and we're trying to
so it's been
increase.
A year, right? Something
it's
like
been
that?
A year. It's we opened up last year's 2018 is May.
Yeah. Time flies.
Time flies so fast. And we're trying to let more people know that we are in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And
get the word out.
Get the word out, basically. Mm. And also, we're trying to expand. Maybe we're going to add something more on the dish, on the menus.
And having access to just so many, like, more spices here than what you would traditionally have in Kazakhstan, but still kind of maintaining the very Dungan authentic thing that you grew up with.
Yes.
It's an interesting balance. To find
we're trying to incorporate some seafood like we grew our culture is more on the land mainland. We don't have any water access so we didn't
but
have
that's
any
like
fish.
Very interesting for you is that
I mean
like
in
trying like to use seafood because that's not something you did back in Kazakhstan.
Yes, we try, because the customers are they demand seafood.
Oh, you're adapting to your New Yorkers.
Yeah, to the market. We have to adapt to the market. But then I'm thinking we can preserve our cultures, like the traditions.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like not to just divert.
Just to like customers' demands.
Yeah.
That's gonna be an interesting challenge ahead.
What is it? Northern Kazakhstan has fish. They have like sturgeon and all that, right?
Oh yeah, they do have a sturgeon, but it wasn't available to our market because it's pretty far and there's not a lot of it's not an import, but it's not a transportation going. They don't really transport it a lot. If you want to get like if my dad ever wanted to get some fish, he had to really go to that area to get that fish. Like he couldn't just go and buy it at outside, like, or he has to ask his friends to send it over through the someone, you know.
I believe it.
Find your own transportation for it.
Yeah,
yeah. We're so lucky here again, like with our many purveyors and sources.
Right.
Jordan, what about you? What are you working on right now, and any other upcoming projects?
Right now we have a restaurant called Wayla that we're just kind of stabilizing. It's been open for about 3 months, but it's doing very well. Thai food.
Any specific region?
It's, you know, we based it off of our chef Tom. He's actually from Bangkok, but you know, he's doing a little bit of Isan, he's doing a little bit of Southern Thai, and it's just kind of like mixing it up. So there's a good range of different items that, you know, are new to New Yorkers, I hope. But we have that. We still have Northern Tiger in Brookfield Place, Lotus and Cleaver in Miami, and then we have a couple other ones on the horizon, and probably another one in Miami pretty soon, and something in Long Island City coming up.
Oh, yeah. That's a lot. And any travel plans back to Kazakhstan?
It's funny because I just spoke to my friend out in Kazakhstan. He just had a baby. So, you know, I might go out there just to, you know, say hi.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, I actually do miss the food out there. You know, you spend time out there and you just want to go back and want to go and eat it. But I can also go to his restaurant.
Oh, Lachman House.
Just let me know whenever you're going so I can join you too. Yeah. I haven't been in Kazakhstan for a long time.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. Yeah. You can't have it. It's true because it's very hard to actually find someone that can speak English because all the signs are in Russian. It's so hard to get around in Kazakhstan.
And are any signs in, I guess it's only in Russian, that's the primary language? Or would you find some signs in, like, I don't know, Chinese?
Never Chinese. Okay. It was just, like, Russian.
Okay.
And more Russian and more Russian. And nobody speaks English.
when were you there before? Like, how long ago?
Last year.
Oh, last year. Because I'm surprised. Like, I see there's a lot of my friends or people, they try to speak English now, and they say there's, like, every corner, every another corner is Chinese now. Chinese restaurant, meaning like the
wave is happening.
Yeah, the Lanzhou Lamian, the hot pot.
Yeah, huogu.
And they start like opening those restaurants and then becoming more trendy right now.
Yeah.
And people just go there and they're trying, becoming like more open minded to all
that's
the cultures.
That's exciting. Yeah,
And that's why I want to see it too. Like I've never seen it like that way. Never seen Kazakhstan that way.
Kazakhstan is changing, and then
it's
you can also like bring back like your experiences from New York.
Yes, totally.
Well, before we wrap up the show, I'm just gonna ask a couple questions for our quick fire round. It's meant to be like really fun and fast, so just share what comes to mind first. All right, carb of choice: rice or noodles?
Rice.
What? Really?
Really?
Yeah, I'm not a noodle person.
What?
Wow, surprised me too.
Okay, I did not.
That's my answer, rice.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's maybe I'm on a diet right now. That's or maybe I've been working with noodles for a year over.
I see. Okay. Fair enough. What's the best thing you ate recently? It can be out or at your restaurant or something you made at home.
No idea. I haven't eaten them.
Just okay. You're just eating rice.
No, I haven't eaten well for the past couple of days.
Okay.
My schedule.
Yes, you're busy running your restaurant.
Oh, what was something? Oh man. Maybe it was one of those experimental dishes at Wayla that Chef Tom actually made. It was some eggplant dip.
Ooh, dip?
Yeah.
Was it spicy?
Yeah, it was spicy. It was good, though.
Oh, and what do you use to dip in it?
Like vegetables, raw vegetables.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Good. Sounds like summer friendly.
Yeah.
All right. If someone was going to Kazakhstan for the first time, what would be the number one thing that you would, you know, make them try in terms of like a dish to try? And number two, what would they need to go see or do?
Horse.
Yeah, I was gonna say horse meat. Yeah.
Okay, or yes. Try the horse.
The sausage is made from the horse intestines.
Okay.
It's really good.
All right.
And this is the sea, right?
Yeah, like is there a sightseeing thing that you have to do or?
Honestly speaking, I haven't really traveled in Kazakhstan a lot because mm-hmm. I was a child when I moved here. Mm-hmm. But then they say it's pretty, the Almaty is very beautiful city and it's.
Is it like more like mountainous or like flat?
Oh, I would say it's mountainous. It's mm-hmm. very mountainous. It's and they that's Almaty is famous for their ice skating.
Yeah, on the mountain, right? Yeah. You go up the mountain and it's like midway.
Yes, Medeo. They call it Medeo. Uh-huh. It's like really fun. It's good yeah. during the
ice
winter.
Ice skating though. Or like skiing?
It's ice skating.
Oh, ice skating.
Yeah,
wow.
But it's up in the mountains.
Ice skating in the mountains.
Outdoors.
Oh, outdoors. Okay, it's really very immersive. Up
there. Yeah, they also have in Almaty, they have a couple mountains there for skiing. And it's really beautiful up there. You don't even have to ski. If you go up to the mountain, you just look down. It's really, really nice.
What's like the high season to travel to Almaty? Is it more like winter than summer or both?
It's better to go in winter. Winter when it's the freezing. Like I said the snow season when you can skiing, ice skating, seeing all those like they built it's old construct. It's been there for a long time, but they built a big stadium in the mountains and it's a really high elevated of course and then. People like it a lot. It's beautiful too. It's like nature.
Yeah, sounds really epic.
And then you can, I'm not sure if you can still can see the, you know, the cat, wildcats. I'm not sure how they call it. Bars.
Bobcats.
The bobcats. Yeah. Not,
oh, there's bobcats.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. That's I guess like, you're in the mountains.
It's famous for the Kazakh. I think that's the one of the few countries who have it. Those animals, and they're in the red book for extinction.
Just bring a jacket. It's really cold.
Dress appropriately and see this.
It's like, a different cold, though. Different cold. It's cold, but the wind doesn't blow.
Yeah, it's. I was gonna argue with that. I think in New York it's much colder.
Yeah, we get the wind chill. Yeah.
It hits through your jacket, but there it's cold, but you
can still like walk around and do activities and things, and the skiing will warm you up. Well, thanks for all the answers and for sharing your stories with us, Ali and Doran. It was a pleasure having you guys on air with us.
Thanks.
Thank you. It was nice having you here.
Yeah, that wraps up our show. And thank you, dear listeners, for tuning in. What did you think of the episode and what do you want to hear more of? Please take a few seconds and leave us a rating and review with your feedback wherever you get your podcasts. We are truly thankful for your support. So we'll be on summer break for a few weeks, and we'll be back early September for more awesome conversations from the world of Asian food.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.